You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time, on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 22nd, 1997.
After 2 years of absolute silence, Boris Said has spoken out. Now, we're about to go to the lines, but Boris, I've got this question for you. Now that you've gone public, Dr. Shore is probably going to react in some manner.
I'm sure.
Unknown for sure. But suppose Dr. Shore were to call me up and say, look, I want an opportunity to speak out publicly. Would you be interested in speaking with Dr. Shore publicly?
You bet.
Oh, you would?
I've got nothing whatever to hide here. You know, I've got nothing to gain and nothing to hide, and the only thing that we can lose here is a lot of precious information. I respected Dr. Shore's confidence for 2 years, and until he pulled the rug out from under me and tried to overwhelm me with dollars and a high-priced firm of attorneys and the whole rest of it, I kept the peace, and I didn't speak out at all. I never said a word. When I saw this thing basically going into a closet forever, I'm sitting here looking at an order from a judge saying the next hearing on this issue will be in March of 1998. The next hearing will be March of 1998.
So it could go years.
It could go years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I think that is unconscionable. I think that's a disservice to certainly to all the people that have supported me. Art, I've got psychics and mystics and teachers and gurus and friends who have supported this thing from the very beginning, and they all of them said to me, why don't you go public? Why don't you go out there and see if there are little people out there someplace that want to help? And that's why I haven't put a price on the tape. I mean, the tape is priceless. I mean, how much is it? $19, $39? It's whatever people want to send me to help continue this work.
All right. Let's go to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with Boris Said. Hello.
Greetings, Art and Boris.
Hi there.
Where are you,
how are
sir?
You?
Where are you?
I'm in cyberspace, also known as Baltimore.
Oh, all right.
And, by the way, I listen to the show every night. There's not a darn station in town that I can get anything of reception from you with, and it's just great to have the Internet to do that.
Well, there will be shortly.
I certainly hope so. Maybe BAL, something like
yeah.
that. So, Mr. Said, you really are my kind of guy. Just wanted to let you know I'm sending Art an email, and I'll be corresponding with you. I want to contribute some webmaster services to get you a big website going with everything that you're doing.
Oh, now there's a good idea, Boris. You do need a website.
Yes.
And that is my business, and you know, we'll be able to incorporate video and audio. Ironically, I've been building a 3D multi-user virtual reality model of Giza. And it'll be interesting. We'll be able to have people, you know, explore, walk up, meet each other, and discuss the issues together, you know, simultaneously.
Well, it's an area I know nothing about.
I'll introduce you to it, perhaps. And we'll get going with that.
Okay.
Just a brief sarcophagus story, perhaps. When I was 15, I went to Israel, and when I was there, we played a game of hide and seek. They sent me down into this deep cave in this coastal city. Lo and behold, I found myself surrounded by these sterling white sarcophagi, and I climbed into one, and strangely enough, it seemed to be a perfect fit, and after a few moments, I seemed to slip into some kind of altered state of consciousness that I came out of several minutes later when they came and found me. But, you know, that story that you told about the sarcophagus and laying inside of it, you know, definitely rings true. And I think there's something, you know, very solid about that, and I think people can maybe look for those sorts of experiences in their own lives and see what they get out of that.
But
I certainly hope you know, we can correspond, and you know, any video and other audio that we do you do have, we can send that out streaming over the internet, and you know, we'll be able to get it in front of a lot of people, and maybe we'll you know, we won't spam, but we'll maybe target some senators and some people that you'd like to get in front of.
Fantastic. Now, did you get my address? Can you send me the information? And then
I certainly will. And I'll be sending an email to Art, and maybe he can get you my phone number that way as well, and we can converse.
All right, done deal. My email address is artbell@aol.com, and while we're at it, Boris, give your address again.
Okay, my address is 1906 Smugglers Hill. And that's in Friday Harbor, Washington, 98250.
All right, and we'll get that out yet again, so everybody get your pencils and papers ready. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Boris Saeed. Hello.
Good morning, Art. Hello, Mr. Saeed.
Hi there.
Is Kathy in Reno. Sir, your efforts are highly commendable.
Thank you.
All righty. I have two question comments. Here we go. In understanding the nature of your experience in the pyramid on that rainy night,
yes.
In essence, you physically bilocated. Okay. Possibly their access to eternal life was this bilocation process, holding the life energy or soul in the secondary position long enough for the physical body in the pyramid to cease its life function and die. The soul now physically bilocated would no longer be subject to the aging process, theoretically, I think.
Okay.
And my last thing, and thank you, Art, for the time. The process of the pyramid's construction, specifically the method used to transport that many stones of such enormous size, has got to be a method unknown to us because...
Because we can't duplicate it.
Well, also during their transport, they would have made, had they been transported across land, they would have made grooves and roads that would still be visible to us to this day, I would think.
All right. Well, I remember, as most of you must, the Ten Commandments where gazillions of slaves were being whipped and these giant stones were being moved up with rollers and all the rest of it. You don't think that's the way it happened, Boris?
I have an apartment in Egypt with a view of the pyramid, and I had 9 wonderful, industrious Egyptian workers in that 5-room apartment one day working. And I'll tell you categorically that if there had been 10, it would have been a catastrophe. So the thought of thousands of people hooked to one block, all pulling at the same time, it just didn't happen.
And then even if you can imagine that occurring... and I remember in the Ten Commandments, slaves getting rolled under the stones and all the rest of it. But then once they got it there, they never did bother to quite show us how they got it up there.
That's right. And the question I want to know is why. Why would they build with stones that size? Why would they set themselves that sort of a task? Why are the temples in front of the Sphinx built with 200-ton stones? What were they defending against?
I don't know. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Boris Saeed. Hello.
Boris.
Yes.
Good morning. How you doing?
Where are you, sir?
I'm here in Georgia.
Georgia, all right.
Yes, and if I'd like to use my email name, I would greatly appreciate it.
No, I'd rather you don't.
All right, let me just give you my initials, T.L. Is that good enough?
Fine.
All right, Boris, remember
yes.
when you was down in the tomb, they wanted you to sign a piece of paper of secrecy, right?
Yes.
The majority of the information is controlled by the order of the Essence and the Knights Templar. Certain information is not supposed to be given out to the public.
I don't think that's the kind of secrecy agreement he had to sign.
No, I signed a secrecy agreement with Dr. Shore,
right,
so that he could keep the information proprietary.
Right, because he's bound. If you go across the Nile to the Dagon tribe, they give you more information on the pyramids.
All right, well, what do you think about that, Boris? There is this old... this is the road that Richard travels down.
Yes.
The Masons, the Knights Templar, all the rest of it. Secret orders and societies, and of course Richard believes that a lot of the discoveries in Egypt have precisely driven the NASA program. How do you react to all of that?
I don't know. I haven't got the information necessary to refute all that stuff, but I have to tell you that this whole conspiracy thing, this whole idea of secrecy, my question is why? If there was an advanced society and they could do amazing things and transcend dimensions and do all the things that Michio is going to talk about on Wednesday, why would there be secrecy? Why is there this kind of religious cabal that prevents us from expanding our awareness of the universe we live in? I just don't buy that.
Well, let's for a second again talk about the Hall of Records. Let us assume for the sake of conversation there is a Hall of Records beneath the Sphinx somewhere.
Yes.
In this chamber.
Right.
That tells us all about a previous, earlier civilization, maybe even is some sort of last attempt on the part of that civilization to record what occurred so it might not occur again, because after all, okay, if there was a previous civilization, they're not around anymore.
That's right.
And so they might have tried to put a sort of a time capsule for the future to tell whoever might come next what not to do.
All right.
So if that's true, and if that's actually found by Egyptian authorities or by whoever, do you think that information really would immediately be made public, or do you think that somebody would, you know, fold it far away? And
well, look what happened with the Dead Sea Scrolls. Look how long it was before that came to light.
Well, that's my point.
It was a scandal.
Yeah.
Now, what I feel is this, that if, in fact, there was a Hall of Records, if I were the Egyptian government and some guy with a seismograph had turned up a room 15 feet or 30 feet below the surface,
right,
in my plateau, and I knew absolutely for a fact that I could drill a high-speed diamond drill hole through limestone and find out what's in there without anybody being the wiser, I would do it. Now, they haven't done it, or they don't admit to doing it, or for whatever reason they're not giving out the information, but it is their plateau.
Do you think they've done it?
yes.
You
yeah,
do?
In a word, I think that they've been in that room. Now, is it the only room? Are there rooms under it? Is it the first of a labyrinth of rooms? I believe that's possible. But I believe that the room under the paw of the Sphinx has been entered.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that's what I've believed from the very beginning, simply because it's not that hidden, Art. It's not that obscure.
In that case, if there is a Hall of Records, it may now be an empty hall.
It may be, or it may be down two or three layers below. We had a very wonderful Israeli psychic there with us named Zev Coleman, and he felt that there were two layers, two strata of rooms below the room that we were identifying. And the problem with the seismic stuff is it only bounces back once. So you'd have to go down to the next level to find out what's at the level below it.
I'm glad I asked. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Boris Said. Hello, where are you?
I'm in Fresno. Name is David.
Hi, David.
Hi, David.
Good morning, Art, Mr. Said.
Hi there. Boris, please.
Okay, Boris. I'm just curious whether you were able to discern any markings on the sarcophagi lids or anywhere down in the well at all.
There were no markings whatsoever in the well.
As a matter of fact, caller, if you have a computer, we've got the photographs up there. You can go look at it.
I'm not on the web currently.
That lid that we found in the bottom of the well was a highly polished black granite sarcophagus lid. It was beveled. It was tapered. It looked exactly like those sarcophagus lids in the burial place of the bulls in Saqqara, where the bulls are buried.
Okay, I think I've seen something like that. Okay, I guess that's about all over here. I really support your work.
Thank you.
Keep it up. I'll help you any way I can.
I'd love to send you a tape.
Okay, good night.
All right, that's KFRE, of course, in Fresno. First time caller line, you're on the air with Boris Said. Hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hi there.
I just wanted to suggest if you write a book, you might want to name it...
Turn your radio off, please.
Okay, 1 second, please.
All right, everybody remember...
I have a little phone anyway.
Close, it's very confusing. Okay, there you go. Hello, caller?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right.
Oh, I forgot what I was going to say. I was just wondering... have you heard the Institute of Christian Research? Because they've been saying for decades that the further back you go in time, the more advanced civilization gets. And that is a Christian organization, so not all Christians would be shocked by this.
Most would. Most Christians believe, I think, that modern civilization is about 6,000 years old.
Mm. Well, that would be Usher's chronology. But I'm just saying the Institute for Christian Research, which believes in a 10,000-year time period, does say the further back you go in time, the more advanced the civilization gets.
Wow.
And the theory being, you know, God created us advanced to begin with, and we degraded.
Well, or something catastrophic came along. Boris, here's a good question for you. Somebody faxed and said, look, I don't think there was any previous civilization, and the reason I don't believe that is because there is no garbage. There's nothing left. Where are all the artifacts of this ancient civilization? Their modes of transportation, their buildings, whatever they might have had that was magnificent or large, where is it?
Well, maybe it's deeper. Uh-huh. We've only scratched the surface. Don't forget, there is a fossil of a sea urchin on the back of the Sphinx that was under seawater millions of years ago. Who knows how deep this stuff is buried? I mean, that's Mark Lehner's argument. Show me a pot shot. Show me one shred of an ancient civilization. But mm-hmm. that's because we assume that ancient civilizations left that kind of garbage because that's what we leave.
You say there's a sea urchin?
So I've got a photograph of the fossil of a sea urchin on the rump of the Sphinx.
Wow!
And that's right next to where the Getty people had their weather barometer 3-4 years ago.
First time caller line, you're on the air with Bora Said. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, all right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mike, I have questions that are related to one another. If it is not a secret society that has been limiting access to the pyramids and the Sphinx, what are the delimiting factors, and does the notion of digging, is that a significant factor, and does that account for your decision to look at or examine what is out, available, and up on top of everything as far as your expedition? And how do you exactly intend to expand the types of eyes? And I'm talking about...
All right, well, one question at a time. Let's okay. tackle them one at a time. The digging.
Okay, the digging, it is very complicated to get an excavation permit in Egypt. It has to be done through an institution of higher learning. It's very costly. It's very complicated. They're very, and understandably so, careful about their artifacts. And it's not a simple process to get the right to dig. That's one of the reasons why we went to a more sophisticated means of looking under the ground. Now, I didn't just decide to look above the ground because they wouldn't let me dig. I've just became convinced through my exposure over 9 years, and again, I have no PhDs. I'm not an educated person in any specific sense of the word in Egypt. But the experience of being there and being confronted with these things and examining the mathematics and the astronomy and the sonics and all of the different aspects of this, it's just become apparent that it's fascinating. And it's a lot more interesting to me than digging under the ground and finding some sort of a tablet that says, you know, this is what Atlantis was all about, which nobody's going to believe anyway for 20 years.
Then following to that question, if you are trying to involve persons who might have other views, have you considered the fact that even when you look at the stars, especially along the equator and where you're seeking to look is not that far, that there's almost millions of stars compared to what we might see in this hemisphere, and that there are different configurations, therefore the myth systems and the science would be different and growing out of a different conceptual framework?
I think it's certainly possible. As I say, I'm not the astronomer, and frankly, I've just read with great interest everything that's been written like this. I think Bavall's stuff is phenomenal, and would have included it in our film if he had not had the break with Shore. And I think that there are so many different logical explanations for things about the pyramid that it's all the more reason to have a serious look at it with all of the scientific disciplines.
All right. Let's see if we can pick one up before the bottom of the hour. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Bora Said. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Reed from New Orleans.
From where?
New Orleans.
New Orleans, yes, sir.
I had a quick question. I was watching a show on the Discovery Channel about 2 months ago. They had some kind of mechanical robot that was going up a shaft or something.
Oh, yes. Boris can tell you about that.
Well, that's I didn't actually see it, but a guy named Gantenbrink, a very brilliant German guy, invented a robotic device that took a camera up that air shaft and photographed a small door with hinges at the end of it.
And how has anybody yet opened that door?
No, not that I know of.
All right, they took a little fiber optic thing and tried to look in, didn't they?
Yes, and nobody knows what they saw underneath it. Now, Richard Hoagland believes that there's a room on the other side of it with a scribe sitting there, a statue of a scribe staring at Orion.
With a black man, I believe he said, with an ankh in his hand.
Right. My own feeling is that if Tom Danley is correct, and the pyramid is a giant sonic device, that perhaps that door was there so that if the pharaoh had too much or not enough or whatever, you could shut the door and turn off the vibration. I mean, that, to me...
That's an interesting theory, Boris.
Well, you can't see through the shaft, right? The shaft's got a bend in it, so you can't see the stars anyway.
So that would cut off the vibration.
Well, the point is that it certainly wasn't there to keep the rain out if the shaft is 8 inches square and
you're darn right. Well, you're darn right. All right, Boris, hang tight. We'll be right back. Bottom of the hour. This is Coast to Coast.
You're listening to Art Bell Somewhere in Time on Premier Radio Networks. Tonight, an encore presentation of Coast to Coast AM from September 22nd, 1997.